It's time now for Alaska Tracks, an oral history of Alaska people and their way of life, celebrating the rich heritage, wild landscapes, and deeply rooted stories of Alaska past. Alaska Tracks, brought to you by Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Mont Saw Shop. And now your host, respected wildlife biologist and outdoorsman, Randy Zarnke.
Hello to everyone out there in Radio Land. This is Randy Zarnke in the studio of KFAR Radio. I'm here as the host of a program we call Alaska Tracks, where we listen to recorded interviews with veteran hunters and pilots and trappers and guides. Today's featured guest is Daniel Carman of Nome. We started our interview with Daniel last week, and we'll finish up today. Daniel was a soft-spoken leader of the Eskimo community on the Seward Peninsula. He was very knowledgeable regarding food resources in that region. He was a hard worker who knew how to hunt and fish to provide for his family. Let's go to Daniel's interview now. In this segment, he talks extensively about reindeer herding.
They first brought reindeer over from Siberia in 1891. They brought 10 live deer back there by the late Dr. Sheldon Jackson. He was a member of the Methodist Church, and they raised funds, and of course the government also had a hand in it. And Dr. Sheldon was also working for the education department for the government. And that 10 deer that landed there at Port Clarence, just out of Teller. About 30 years later, it increased to, they said, about 300,000 to 600,000. At that time also, the Eskimos weren't reindeer herders. So they brought over some people from Norway to teach the Eskimos how to reindeer herd. The reason Dr. Sheldon brought over deer was the outside sources that came up every spring to hunt whale were depleting that resource that the Inupiaq people always depended on. So they tried to bring something that can provide meat like the reindeer. The Norwegian herders that were training the Eskimos sold their shares of reindeer they earned to the Loman Commercial Company. There were white people that were here in Nome, bought reindeer from the Norwegians. It was understood by the natives, only the natives could have deer them days, but they bought the shares of the Norwegian herders before they left and developed their own herds. They developed a market outside Lower 48, and they built slaughtering plants. See, one up in the Buckland area, one up at Brevig Mission, Unalakleet area, and I think all of them, if I remember correctly. They developed a good market for the reindeer products. And that's when the multiplying of reindeer was so great. The food resource was depleting, and too many reindeer, and that's when the reindeer starved just about at World War II in the 40s. I was turning 18, a good friend of mine and I came down here to Nome to work. They were building a military site here, the Army was, and we came down to work. We saw a lot of reindeer coming from Deering, just starving to death. And after that die-off of reindeer, the Bureau of Indian Affairs came on board to what was remaining of the herds. They had them separated at the Good Hope River, just right out of Deering, with the Teller unit herds and the Deering herd. They separated the deer. There was about 20,000 left. I was working with the reindeer program with the Cork, a non-profit arm for the regional corporation. We had 15 herds on the Seward Peninsula, and we were building it back up. But the caribou that migrate here annually, their migration route used to be away from where the reindeer herds were. They'd come down from Barrow, Point Hope, Kotzebue, up the Kobuk River. Then they'd migrate straight south to Koyuk, Shaktulik, and Unalakleet. Never in here, but their food source was depleting also. Up there where they're from, the Barrow area, they began dying off, and that's when they start coming in here, farther into the peninsula, and taking away the reindeer when they migrate back north. We used to have 15 herds, now there's about 4 herds. But they're working on it. 5-year program that we developed when I was heading the program for the reindeer herders, we had the entire Seward Peninsula surveyed by Soil Conservation Service to see how much food source we have. And we had them survey about 16 million acres of reindeer grazing lands. And we had visitors from the reindeer industry from Siberia. They were scientists in the reindeer industry over there. When they came here to work with the university out of Fairbanks, they said we had one of the best reindeer grazing areas on the Seward Peninsula. We done the survey, which we considered vital, you know, since we were going to have new landowners, federal and state, and 12 regional native corporations, and of course the village corporations. That was the reason we developed a five-year program to work with state and federal. And we got that in place, but there was one thing we failed to do, was to do the feed study, which the Siberians have. It's working with Norway reindeer industry, and that's something we got to do some catch up on.
Talking about the community of Deering, did you have houses built out of wood?
Yes, we had the same thing like that. Deering and the area up there were affected by the coal mining. They built a lot of housing. But there's one catch: when the federal government came on board to get their portion of land, that the reindeer industry will not be able to build shelter cabins, nor corrals, and things of that nature, or use of snow machines. So the president of the Reindeer Herd Association and me, as the director of the program, we had a guy from the Park Service that was here. I took him up to Deering to study the reindeer and the fawning cycle that they have up there. Then the guy up Shishmaref had them study up there too. It was in May that I brought him up to Deering, since I'm familiar with that location. And the guy from the association was born and raised in Shishmaref and was a herd owner also. The guy and I gone to Deering. We were stormbound in the village for pretty near 3 days. And I asked him point blank. I said, "Sir, if you and I were caught out in the country in this storm with no shelter cabin, what would we do? Maybe perish." He said, "You had something there." And then I took him in the location where we had open spots of bare land in May, and I purposely went over it with a snow machine. And I told him, "Sir, you see the tracks I made with the snow machine here, but in the summer when growth occurs and the leaves sprout, you won't see it. And of course we're always careful where we're going to travel. Sometimes we don't use snow machines." And he got the word. We've had corrals for the history of reindeer for 100 years. And then the guide wanted the herder down Shishmaref to run his herd through a nesting ground. I'm glad I wasn't there, because he cussed that guy out. I said, "We don't do that. We respect the nesting grounds. Reindeer respect that too." So, you know, the ignorance of people that want to start something don't take into consideration what we've lived by all our lives. And it's a lesson that we could learn together.
Do you remember years when the harvest of whether it's marine mammals or berries or fish was especially poor?
I've never witnessed anything like that, like, other than fishing, because we've gotten a lot of commercial fishermen from stateside, from foreign countries, taking advantage of a lot of good fishing we've had up here. The last decade that my wife and I experienced here in Nome, every year it was closed. My wife and I, if we wanted dry fish, we had to go to Deering or up to Teller to do our fishing where it wasn't closed. But we enjoyed humpies that come here in abundance every other year. Other than that, I've never witnessed the lack of berries. It's always there. The roots, the greens that we depend on, the seal oil that we depend on from the bearded seal, is there. But with this climate that's changing, we don't know what it's going to do with the marine mammals. we're going to be affected if we can't get our sea level source. But maybe we could use a smaller seal. We don't know yet.
Do you still go out hunting?
We do that. We leave our grandson do the hunting out in the ocean. It's getting too much for me to do anymore, so he does that with other younger people. We do a lot of fishing, cutting fish, trying to teach our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Picking berries, we teach them, and drying fish, how to do it, how to cut things, try to pass on the customs of our Inupiaq culture. It's hard to do anymore. Tell you, with this modern day and age we live in, we have a TV where the younger boys would rather play computer games. No more hunting, no more fishing. But it'll take maybe a catastrophe one day. Had a bunch of high school kids that were going to drop out from high school, and I have a lot of slides on ugu hunting, the breeded seal. We as hunters, I told them how we do it, how the women folks do the cutting and drying. And I said, kids, I said, if we have a catastrophe here, do you kids know how to hunt? I'm sure your parents, your grandparents, want you fellas to be involved. So I showed the slides, and I showed them how we hunt as a group in a boat of four. Then how the women folks will cut it up and do it properly and have food for the winter. I said, that's what it'll take, kids. If we have a catastrophe here, if you don't know how to do it, you're going to starve. You got to learn how to do it.
Daniel was largely self-taught in the ways of the world. He had a strong intellect and even stronger work ethic. That's a combination destined to succeed. Time here for a break to hear from our sponsors. Those sponsors support this program. I hope that you'll support them in return. Now back to our interview with Daniel Carman of Nome.
Here about 2 years ago, our granddaughter, who's married now and has kids, she's married to a white person, and they wanted to learn how to cut fish. So we went 2 years ago down to Fort Davis Bridge and set out a seine and had them do it. She had twins 46 years after we had our twins, and she has a girl and boy, the twins. And she was telling her girl, don't you dirty that dress now when we go fishing. Them kids went down to the boat, caught fish, and that girl with the dress on filled her dress full of fish. I said, Marie, that's what we were taught. Don't scold her. She's learning a system where we depended on the kids. Our parents taught us our chores to bring fish to the cutting board. We boys were taught to hang the fish. And it's a custom that we were trying to keep alive. And my wife and I had a lot of fun. We didn't make fun of her, you know, we just told her that's something she's going to have to learn to do. So we were glad it occurred.
How about wolves? Did the wolves ever bother your reindeer?
That's something the herder always took care of. As long as we had a hunting permit.
Do you have any stories you remember about wolverines? You mentioned them a couple times. Were they a problem in the outlying camps?
Not in the outlying camps. The hunting and trapping that occurs in the fall, they'll catch those during the course of the winter. As long as we got the permit to do that, we have used the wolverine and the wolf for our fur parkies. We've always protected the herds too from the predators doing away with the reindeer. One of the cultures that we're kind of losing in the Inupiaq or Indian or Aleut nation, they do the same thing where when a boy turns 13, I remember that so well. My parents told my older brothers to include me now to go hunting seal. We done that out of Deering with the dog team down to Cape Essenberg, where we hunted our seal. And that was my first time I went out. And that was always the custom of the other families as well. And of course, the women folks, they done that too, in teaching their daughters when they're 13 years old what to expect. We were all taught. And I went on hunting seal with the brothers. They told me to cook some rolled oats for breakfast, my first chore. Okay, I'll do it. And I didn't know nothing about cooking. I was eating it all my life, 13 years old. What I'd done, I got a dipper full of water from the ocean, heated it up, and when it boiled, I put some more salt in it. I remember Mama doing that and put the mush in there. When it was done, I hollered to the boys, "The mush is done." They came in, they said, "That thing is too salty, you shouldn't get water from the ocean." That was my first lesson. I never repeated that. And got my first seal to bring home. And I said to the boys my same age, I got a seal. But Pop and Mama said, "You give your first catch to an elder in the community." And I did. That was the custom of our culture. I'll never forget what that elderly lady I gave my seal to. She said in Eskimo, "God bless you with many more things." And that lived with me all my life. I'll never forget that. And my wife worked in the school for about 21 years. And they're always asking her, "How does your husband get moose anytime he goes out?" Oh, finally told her that we had an elder bless him years ago. And it still lives. I remember back when Eisenhower was president, we had a recession nationwide. I came down from Deering to go to work here, but no work. And it was early enough to do your hunting from the ocean at Deering, a lot of fish, a lot of berries. And I began to realize what that old lady said to me way back 30, 40 years ago. Her blessing is still with me. And that's something that's being forgotten by the Marivac people or Indians or Aleuts. So it's something that's got to be included maybe in our educational system.
Now, you mentioned moose. You hadn't talked about moose before. Mm-hmm. Did you hunt for moose every year?
No, we never had moose up here until about the latter 60s, I guess. But they're depleting again. A lot of predators, I guess, bears. Then, of course, if the wolves, if you got to watch them. Even the ravens are predators, even though it's a bird that respected. The reindeer herders' observations, they'll watch the ravens. The reindeer will gather together when they're having fun. They'll separate the female reindeer and the fawn and kill the fawn. Something they got to watch. You would think that a bird will not harm, but they are.
How about muskox? I know that they're here now. Were they here when you were younger?
No. We've never had muskox in up there. They were transplanted here from Nunavak Island. That's something that's got to really be studied. I was with the University Extension Service when Yun and the Cleet had a group fenced in. They were tearing up the fenced-in area, and they wanted them out of there. They asked me to go down and ask them, and I looked at that, and they had someone ahead of time where they can relocate, you know, so they did. My wife and I went up to Shishmaref, where we saw some musk oxen. They're uprooting the ground. The fur that they have is falling down to the ground, affecting the berry picking, the salmon berries that we were going after. Just got to be controlled again, just like caribou. Keep the numbers at a level where it will not hurt the food source. Should have been a little more study, a little more control, I guess.
When you were younger, I assume you used skin boats?
No, we had wooden boats, especially in land where we were attacked by the gold miner, what's good and what's bad. They'd done a lot of trading. We used to be a healthy group of Inupiaq people before the trading between the sailing ships. That's when the health of our people began to decline. Got affected with tuberculosis, cancer, and they traded alcohol and smoke. You know, that's what affected our people more. And my wife and I remember that in the village we were growing up, we began to see someone dying of cancer and tuberculosis. I remember going to school, the teachers thought we were starving, so they wanted us to be healthy. They started giving us cod liver oil. But we had good seal oil, good meat. Yeah, we had the best vitamized food sources. They never knew that. That's how come we were healthy. You know, I think there's got to be more communication by landowners, the different landowners, like the federal or state. There's been a lot of times I wish they would take advantage of a lot of elders to get information on what was the best way to do things. Our elders statewide knew, and we were always told when we were hunting, whether it be for predators or for other animals, don't just shoot them just for fun. We were told not to shoot no more than we have to have. We had a hearing here. Fish and Game said that gold mining was a bad effect for our resources that we have. And I differed with them. I worked with two dredges in Deering up the Imnichik River. And I told them, I said, all the 10 years I worked with them, we never had fish shortage. They were coming up the river, and maybe the dredge were digging out some of the food sources that the fish love. And they were always careful on putting oil in the dredge. And I said, I've never witnessed that shortage of fish in Deering. So I told them that, and I don't know if they appreciated that or not. But that's our downfall. They won't listen to us just because we don't have a diploma. Wife and I just went up to 8th grade, never heard high school, but we had the greatest instructors in our parents and the elders in our community. And that's still vital for our people. They got to learn to get back to the roots on what was successful and kept us alive.
I respect Daniel's description of Eskimo elders teaching their youth and then the practice of youth honoring elders. There's a lot to be learned from those customs, regardless of your ethnicity. That's all for today on Alaska Tracks. Tune in again next week for another episode.
You have been listening to Alaska Tracks, a blend of interviews, storytelling, and firsthand accounts from Alaskans who know the land and carry forward the traditions of this remarkable state. Alaska Tracks has been brought to you by Ginger Orem with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding and Extreme North Trailers, Rod Saw Shop, and Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware. Join us next Saturday for another episode of Alaska Tracks, about Alaskans, for Alaskans, by Alaskans.